Mr. Jose Manuel Saucedo, and he is a research study coordinator at the UCLA Department of Urology, part of the David Geffen School of Medicine. And currently, Mr. Saucedo works closely with men diagnosed with various cancers, particularly prostate and bladder cancers. Please join me in welcoming our next presenter.
Good afternoon, everybody. Okay, so today I'll be talking about smoking cessation at bladder cancer diagnosis and the potential benefit in this teachable moment for men who are newly diagnosed bladder cancer patients. So first, I have no relationships to disclose. So this is a quick overview of what I'll be talking about. So first I'll start with the description of a teachable moment. So typically we describe a teachable moment as a health event thought to motivate a particular individual to adopt a risk-reducing health behavior. So in this case, the major health event we're talking about is a new bladder cancer diagnosis, and the risk-reducing behavior is smoking cessation, so helping men or helping our participants quit smoking. So my objective here is to illustrate the power of this teachable moment in changing smoking behavior in participants who have a recent bladder cancer diagnosis. Also to determine the impact on bladder cancer diagnosis and subsequent tobacco use, and understand the impact of pharmacotherapy and behavioral treatments on quit success among cancer survivors. So a quick tidbit on bladder cancer and smoking. I know my colleague here, Sarah, explained a lot of it already, but smoking is the most important risk factor for bladder cancer. Smokers are at least three times as likely to get bladder cancer as non-smokers, and smoking causes about half of the bladder cancers in both men and women, so there is no differences amongst the genders. Also, a very big statistic is the American Cancer Society estimates approximately 75,000 new bladder cancer cases in 2014. So what happens when someone smokes? You know, they inhale the cigarette, and the carcinogens from the tobacco smoke are absorbed into the lungs and end up in the blood. From the blood, they're filtered over through the kidneys, where they concentrate into the urine. So these chemicals, you know, end up in the urine and can damage the cells lining the inside of the bladder, which increase the chance of cancer developing. So you can see the little diagram there. So the following is a list of cessation methods which we included for our participants to discuss. So the first would be pharmacotherapy, which is maybe a little bit more of an invasive approach, which would include a nicotine patch, gum, prescribed medication, or smokeless tobacco, or maybe an e-cigarette. The other would be behavioral treatment, so that would be counseling, so either in a group, individually, a class, a cessation clinic, also a quit smoking telephone line, a buddy system, or just quitting on their own, cold turkey. Okay, so now I'll dive in into our particular project. So this was a population-based cross-sectional survey. So my colleague Sarah and I basically used the same set of people. I'll be talking about a subset of that group. So they were participants recently diagnosed with bladder cancer. The data was obtained from the California Cancer Registry, which is the state of California's population-based cancer surveillance system. And the respondents were surveyed 3 to 4 years after the diagnosis. Here we go. So as I mentioned, we'll be focusing on the active smokers So basically a subset of the larger project. So these are the classifications we used for our respondents. So the first was never smokers, so people who, or participants who had smoked less than 100 cigarettes in their entire lifetime. Also former smokers, participants who had smoked 100 or more cigarettes in their entire lifetime but had quit smoking prior to their bladder cancer diagnosis. And you know, the main theme of my talk, active smokers. Smokers at the time of diagnosis who were either smoking every day or some days. Perfect. So as part of our survey, we asked our active smokers two very important questions. So first we asked if they had made a dedicated attempt to quit smoking. Also, if they had made a dedicated attempt to quit, we asked whether a provider, be it a urologist or a primary care provider, had recommended any type of help in trying to quit smoking. So the recommendations would be either the pharmacotherapy or the behavioral treatments. And obviously those who hadn't made a dedicated quit to attempt were excluded from this. So here's a breakdown of the respondents. So total respondents to the survey were 790. But again, I'll mention that the only ones we're going to concentrate on are the active smokers. So out of the 790, only 19% were active smokers at the time of diagnosis. Here's a little bit more information on those active smokers. So the majority were between ages 60 and 69. The majority were male, white, had no college education, and had an income of less than or equal to $50,000 a year. Okay, so from here on out, I'm just going to talk about the active smokers in our cohort. So out of the 147 who mentioned they were active smokers at the time of diagnosis, 42% were recent ex-smokers at the time of survey. So what we mean by recent ex-smokers is they quit at or after bladder cancer diagnosis, but prior to the survey. So we gave ourselves about a one-year gap of, you know, before and after. 76% of the active smokers attempted to quit prior to the survey. So that's, you know, that's good news. But as you can see here, the big number is that 35% of them actually failed to quit, and 21% of the quit attempts were actually at diagnosis. So you can see that those numbers are fairly low. You would, you know, one would imagine that if, you know, a urologist or a primary care doctor tells you, you know, Mr. So-and-so, your bladder cancer diagnosis is due to smoking, you should quit. You know, one would imagine someone would make a vigorous attempt to quit, but only 21% of the quit attempts were at diagnosis. Okay, so I'm going to move on. As part of our questionnaires, we also asked participants about the receipt of tobacco use screening, so whether or not their provider asked if they use tobacco, the advice to quit, and any assistance that was recommended by their providers. So as some of you guys may know, the five major steps for intervention by a provider to help a patient quit smoking are: one, to ask if they're current tobacco users; two, advise, you know, the patient to quit and provide information on how beneficial that is for their health; assess someone's willingness to quit; assist in finding resources for them; and last but not least, arrange follow-ups to help the patient follow through and quit for good. So we use three out of those five, which would be ask, advise, and assist. So our active smokers reported that 90% were asked by a provider if they used tobacco at the time of diagnosis. So that's very high. Also, 82% reported that a provider advised them to quit. And the last two here, 27% were recommended to quit using both methods, either a pharmacotherapy approach or a behavioral treatment, while 34% were recommended to use one or the other. So this graphic here represents the sort of our participants' quit patterns, and it shows the distributions of the assistance recommended by providers and the approach used by our active smokers. So out of the 147 who mentioned they were active smokers, only 116 made a dedicated quit attempt. 31 of them continued to smoke. As you can see here, the majority of those who made a dedicated quit attempt mentioned that they quit on their own. So you can see 64. 38 used either of the two interventions, so either a pharmacotherapy approach or a behavioral treatment, and only 14 of them used both. So you can see that the majority of them quit on their own without any assistance. Okay. So now this illustrates, again, the actual use of those methods and the quit attempts between the 116 who made a dedicated attempt to quit. Like I mentioned, 64 of those who made a dedicated quit attempt used neither approach, and 42 were successful at, to quit smoking. On the other end, only 14 used both approaches, and only 5 were successful. So you can see that approximately it's 2 times more likely for our respondents to quit smoking using neither approach than using both approaches. So this, illustrates the power of this teachable moment, where we're basically trying to harness the diagnosis of bladder cancer and prompting somebody to quit smoking. As I mentioned earlier, 82% of active smokers at the time of diagnosis were advised to quit, and 27% were recommended to use both methods, while 34% were recommended to use one or the other. So the majority of them were recommended to use one type of intervention. But we found that, the majority just quit on their own. And basically, that doesn't mean that counseling or, nicotine patches or prescribed medication don't work. It just basically, means that it's probably more helpful for someone to learn from their bladder cancer diagnosis than from a prescribed medication or from, a recommendation for an intervention. So again, the majority of our active smokers missed this teachable moment. They missed the opportunity to harness the impact of a new bladder cancer diagnosis to change their health behaviors. 24% made a quit attempt after their diagnosis. The impact of a new diagnosis wasn't there. And 42%, which were the recent ex-smokers, so that means they had quit smoking or attempted to smoke prior to diagnosis, sort of missed out on the motivational benefit of a new diagnosis to quit smoking. So as my colleague mentioned, urologists are well positioned to maximize the impact of bladder cancer diagnosis on their patients' motivation to quit. They play a pivotal role in increasing the knowledge and the relationship between tobacco use and bladder cancer among active smokers. It would be, extremely important to task urologists with ensuring that newly diagnosed bladder cancer patients are aware of the role of that tobacco plays in causing their particular cancer. There are some limitations to our project, again, as my colleague mentioned. Smoking status was self-reported, and under-reporting of tobacco use is possible. Another big one is recall bias of a provider's recommendation. So it's likely for those who quit successfully to not mention other methods that the provider might have recommended. And it's also equally as likely that individuals who fail to quit may not recall a particular recommendation since it might have not been successful for them. Also, we relied we didn't have a standardized quantification of nicotine dependence. So we relied on the intensity and duration of cigarette use or our participants' heaviest smoking period. So last but not least, take-home message. New bladder cancer diagnosis does not equate cessation. As I mentioned, 21% of quit attempts were at diagnosis, so that means, you know, the rest were not. A lot of the participants continued to smoke after they were diagnosed, and those who did attempt to quit, 35% failed. Another take-home message would be, despite, you know, medical recommendations for assisted cessation, most quit without any help, so they quit on their own. And last, the critical role that urologists play in encouraging a quit attempt. It really illustrates the power of this moment. Take advantage of a bladder cancer diagnosis to help change a particular patient's or a particular participant's health behavior. Perfect. And lastly, I want to acknowledge that our research was supported by the TRDRP, or the Tobacco-Related Disease Research Program in the University of California, and Dr. Jeff Bassett. Thank you.